My name is Kevin Cahill. I've been a journalist for 50 years. That includes the Sunday Times Rich List, where I was the assistant editor. And I've written a number of books.
Now, there's also another part of your past I would like to probe to do with a certain country which is now firing missiles into Tel Aviv. This is a country called Yemen, because I understand you were actually stationed out there back in the old days. Can you tell us what was going on out there? Why you were there? What was happening?
It was a British colony.
Roughly what year?
1966-67. And it was a British colony, and in theory, it was in revolt. Aden, or the Yemen, I think of it, had been in revolt for 2,000 years. It was one day, some guys from the Telegraph were out there, and they were talking about Marxist guerrillas and all this sort of things. And one of our officers said to them, "Have you ever seen Marxist guerrillas who say prayers five times a day?" The Yemenis have been bandits since the time of Jesus Christ. And if you have got goods and stuff, they'll try and raid you. So this was all dressed up as, you know, an anti-colonial rebellion. It was no such thing.
So the British were there because I believe it was a oiling port for ships after they passed the Suez Canal heading out to India.
It was before the Suez Canal. It was really important. You know, you had to pull in. But it was...
So this is for ships that had already been round Africa. They would stop off there before they carried on eastwards.
So it was quite an important shipping route.
So what was the insurgency like when you were there? It was always quite a left-wing country, wasn't it? Yemen. They were more egalitarian. They wasn't really run by an elite or an oligarchy.
It was run by tribes. They were entirely Islamic. They alleged left-wing Marxist guerrillas all said prayers five times a day. So that it wasn't a joke, because a few people got killed, but it was not a serious rebellion. All that was happening there was what had happened for 2,000 years.
Right, so we had air bases there. We had a naval base. What was the retreat? What was it like? Was it very swift? Was it fairly orderly? Or was it a disaster? Were a lot of people killed?
No, almost nobody was killed. It was complete chaos. The quartermasters were more worried about getting the surplus stocks of condoms out than they were of, you know, getting real military equipment. It was extremely badly organized, but hardly anybody got killed.
Right. So anyway, look, up till today, and you're looking into, I know you're looking into, we've got this company called Palantir. They are scooping up people's data.
Yeah. Palantir are stealing medical data. That's their job. And claims by, as was NHS England, that they've done due diligence are untrue.
So I think this is just round about the time of COVID. There was circulated a petition, and as part of that it said, well, if you fill in this form, NHS cannot hand on your data. So have Palantir managed to get around that, do you think?
And they got around it because it was ignored. A deal was done, and the authorities, the bureaucracy, agreed to hand them the medical data, and the Tories signed for it.
Well, look, you've sent an advert in to Private Eye, which Private Eye have decided they don't want to even allow your advert in there.
They don't want to allow the advert or the story.
Right, so they not only don't want the story, they're not going to even allow you to put an ad in there.
Nope.
So they're not really doing the job Private Eye was set up to do at all. Kevin, you're talking about is internet service providers based in America, but operating illegally and criminal in the UK. We'll just go through them. Microsoft, Apple, Google, Facebook and Meta, Yahoo, YouTube, Skype,
and AOL.com. So Google, I think, is YouTube. It's the same company. Skype is Microsoft, as far as I know. So some of these are mixed with one another. But anyway, why do you call these companies illegal and criminal in the UK?
Two reasons. In 2018 and 2019, a select committee of the House of Commons called them criminals. And
so which select committee was that?
DCMS, Digital Media, Culture and Sport Committee. But it was a full select committee, and it printed in Hansard, the record, the official record, it printed a report of an investigation that the committee made.
And so why were they saying that these companies are criminal? Why?
Because they're stealing personal data, you know, everything you do and whatever you do, on behalf of a foreign espionage agency. This is the big crime.
So who is this foreign espionage?
The National Security Agency of the...
Americans are our allies.
Not anymore. And they never were. It's a con. So...
But they are our allies. Surely it's okay for them to pass intelligence information backwards and forwards.
This isn't intelligence. This is everything. This is an attempt to gain control of the British population.
So is any of this actually published in Hansard, and which makes it privileged?
29 pages. So it's completely privileged. But what neither the BBC nor the Guardian ever reported that Parliament had reported. This report was never reported by the Guardian or BBC.
So anyway, with these companies, Microsoft, Apple, Google, Facebook, Yahoo, YouTube, Skype and AOL, have they been asked, called to account in any way?
No.
They were given 10 months to answer something?
They were given, the nine of them were given 10 months to challenge the evidence, to challenge the investigation, challenge the report.
So they haven't replied to that?
No.
This is a contempt of Parliament, surely?
It is an extremely serious contempt of Parliament. You know, this isn't just a casual little thing. This is a big thing.
So what happens to the data once it's been, as you say,
shipped
stolen?
Off to the National Security Agency.
What do they do with it?
The data is split on the way to the States. Each of these companies and others steal what they want to create their files on us. And the National Security Agency then has a master file, which, based on a conference I attended, or in fact I actually chaired it, they share it with the Israelis.
Well, look, you say in the advert that you wanted to put in and the story that you wrote for Private Eye very kindly, but they declined. You're saying that they use that data to interfere with and manipulate the UK victims?
That's the purpose.
How?
Well, if you're using the web, you know, your mobile or whatever, or you're sending emails, they analyse them to see what your vulnerabilities are. Now, the big vulnerability that they're searching for is gambling. And they made that search at the request of Rupert Murdoch.
Right, so you're saying that there are two official acts of Parliament that have been broken by these people, the National Security Act of 2023 and the Official Secrets Act.
Yep. Something funny happened inside the system. And in 2023, two different acts of Parliament appeared with the same words. And the words were dead simple. They said, it is now a criminal offence to act, to operate in the United Kingdom on behalf of a foreign intelligence agency without declaring it. And none of the nine, as far as I know, have declared what they're doing and who they're doing it for.
Could they have been declaring this information out of the public domain secretly?
Sorry?
Could they have been actually making those declarations secretly, say, for example, to the Foreign Office?
No, the party that produced the alleged forms to fill in. 50 pages of forms is the Home Office. So we know exactly which part of the bureaucracy is engaged in what amounts to treason. It's the Home Office. But then, what's news?
Well, look, none of this really seems to have been reported. So what about the Information Commissioner? That's their job, isn't it, to look out for things?
I have an interesting correspondence with them. They harboured a criminal on their board for 5 years. The guy who fiddled it in the first place. The first fiddle was the courts.
So who's that?
His name is Peter Hoestinks. He was the data...
Great name.
Yeah, he's Dutch. And he's a crook. And he's never challenged. When I found out what he'd done, what he did, dead simple. The Irish High Court said, these guys are stealing data in throughout the EU, including the UK, and they're doing it for the National Security Agency. So there's a court judgment. The European Court of Justice, the Supreme Court of the EU, endorsed that. And this guy, Hoestinks, suppressed it. And he got away with it. And most of the people on the body, the EU data protection, whatever they were called, were lawyers. So the lawyers got together and broke the law. But that's what they do.
So what about this thing called Privacy Shield?
Privacy?
Privacy Shield.
Oh, the European Court of Justice threw it out as unlawful. So it's struck down. But Hoestinks ignored that and did a kind of extrajudicial agreement with the American government.
So is there, is,
did anything.
Is there anywhere that we can apply to or write to I mean, I would think maybe the Information Commissioner's office, but to say, well, hang on a minute, look at all these crimes that are going on here with our data. Will you please act and stop it because it's all unlawful?
Not only have I done that about five times for each of the companies, I have also won court judgments against three or four of them. And it's not even been reported. The Guardian didn't report it and the BBC didn't report it. And I have no idea why not.
Well, you've also compared it to the post office scandal.
There's something the same. The key thing in the post office scandal, and nobody has paid attention to it, is that during the scandal, on 900 occasions, highly paid judges convicted innocent postmasters. I describe that as grotesque incompetence. 900 times, and nobody said, hey, shouldn't somebody make these guys pay a fine for doing this? And shouldn't somebody bring these people? But the trouble is, they are the judges. But the hidden... The deep catastrophe behind the post office is the judges screwed it. And nobody's said that. But behind this, you can actually trace the criminal activity from the suppression of the court judgments, the unlawful deal with the United States. But nobody did anything.
Well, this is it's almost like a kind of criminal element within the government and within the regulators. Sounds a little bit like the Anthony Stansfield we were talking to last week in his Lloyds Bank scandal.
As you know, I knew Anthony extremely well because he and I spent 2 years together at a place called Sandhurst. And he's a conservative, but he's as straight as you get. And his own police force, he was the police commissioner for Thames Valley Police. And the Thames Valley Police tried to oppose him when he tried to prosecute the Lloyds Bank staff for fraud. He succeeded eventually. 8 of them went to jail.
Remember, he's not actually even a police officer. He's only a commissioner.
He was
police commissioner.
Yeah. But if I mean, he ran, he gave a talk in a committee room in Parliament, and he described the board of Lloyds Bank as corrupt. Now, normally, you know, the rich start flying. Nothing. He didn't have formal protection, which the report we're talking about here does have. The report that said Microsoft and the rest of the gang are criminals has privilege.
That's right. This is where you can't be sued if it's been printed in Hansard, or if it's a report published by a House of Commons committee, yeah, or if it's spoken by an MP in Parliament.
No, not just spoken. There's a distinction.
Written as well.
If it's printed in Hansard under oath, then it's totally protected. But anyway, these guys just ignored Parliament. I mean, why are they here?
So you are, as it says in this advert that Private Eye refused to print, a former special advisor to members of the House of Lords on surveillance and supercomputers between 2010 and 2018.
Yes, I do know my subject. I know what I'm talking about. But even when I was in the House of Lords, when I was working there, Microsoft had me under surveillance. I got that out of them. They had Parliament under surveillance. Hey, come on. They were the IT contractor to Parliament.
Well, this is how it's done, isn't it? You make sure that you have all the data for a particular organisation. That's how you take it over, yep, even if it is the British government.
Well, it's not mentioned here in this little saga with Private Eye. I have written to the President of the Supreme Court of the United Kingdom, Lord Reid, and told him that the courts are a target specifically of Microsoft. And there have been meetings around the EU, especially in Ireland, where the judges, the highest level of judge in the whole Europe, have got together to discuss the surveillance of their courts by Microsoft, but nothing's happened. Carrying on.
I mean, we've talked here mostly about what's going on in Britain, but actually this is illegal activity by these tech giants in the EU too, on all the EU countries.
In September 2007, Microsoft imposed mass surveillance throughout the EU. I'm quoting the court.
Which court?
The European Court of Justice and the Irish High Court. So the facts are not in dispute, but they're not being reported.
They're not being reported, they're not being acted on. So no. You've got a website, I think, is it called catchacrook.co.uk?
This was the get-out clause. I'm setting these two websites up, so they're not fully functional.
Right.
I've got a organisation in Cheltenham doing it for me. And this was one of the excuses by the commercial side of Private Eye, that they weren't up and running. They're not. But they should have been.
Well, look, before we say goodbye, Kevin, I must ask you about Gaza, because as a former soldier, you must be rubbing your eyes watching what's going on. As 2.2 million people, those that are left of the 50,000 at least or so that have been killed, are now being starved to death.
Can I, at Sandhurst, with Tony Stansfield, I learned military law and the laws of war. What's happening in Gaza? Forget the big words. It's mass murder by the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces. They are acting as the Nazis did in World War II. They are the perfect heirs because of the mass murder they're inflicting on the Palestinians. Long ago, I visited some of the camps and I saw what the IDF were doing. But now they're committing mass murder, and the biggest, they are dropping 2,000 kilo bombs on tents with children in them. It's unspeakable. But then several people in Parliament, the president of, I know it's a tiny place, the president of Ireland has said these things. So has the Irish government. So has the Spanish government and the Norwegian government. And because the United States is supplying the 2,000-kilo bombs and the ammunition, no, nobody's stopping it.
Well, look, some people are saying things like we must airdrop aid in. Others saying that there needs to be some sort of military intervention, a peacekeeping force or something to keep the IDF away from these Palestinian civilians and possibly even a no-fly zone to stop them dropping bombs on them.
The trouble is assembling an intervention force, as you can guess, is an enormous... Think of Iraq when we and Kuwait when we... It took 6 months, and the idea of the Israeli defense, the IDF, is clearly no different from the Waffen SS. They're mass murderers, and people shouldn't be using words like genocide. Mass murder of children is mass murder.
Why not genocide?
Sorry?
Why not genocide?
For ordinary people, that's a legal word. Ordinary people here need simpler facts.
But it is. I mean, it's they're trying to wipe out a people, aren't they?
Yeah. That's what I know the legal word is genocide, but on the ground, this is daily mass murder.
I wonder in the army, did you ever serve with people who had served in Palestine for the British Army in the war? Because this was well known actually back in the 1950s that the Israeli terrorists who'd set up the State of Israel were a pretty difficult lot to deal with.
There were a lot of the early Israeli defense forces were from all sorts of armies all across Europe. Some of them were from the German army, but they came from Polish army, they came from the French army, French Foreign Legion, all sorts of places. And they were extremely tough. They had survived World War II. But I actually witnessed them in action. I didn't see them shoot anybody, but I saw them beat up elderly Palestinian women and throw tear gas canisters in people's tents and houses.
So anyway, you're quite an author. Your latest, I think, is Who Owns Ireland? Who Owns the World? Who Owns Britain? So can you just tell us a bit about those books and how people can get hold of them if they want?
Yeah, they're all on Amazon. And they arose because when I was doing the rich list with Philip Beresford, he told me that the wealth of the aristocracy was land, and it was extremely obscure. So he told me to go and do it. So I did. And that led to the first book, which described and named, this was why people got uppity, it named the big landowners in England and Scotland.
Your whereabouts can people go if they want to follow some of your work on internet privacy and security? Because this, back in the 1980s, I can remember a whole hoo-ha about with Data Protection Act. We must make sure our data is protected. It does seem to me that now we're in the situation where almost all of our private personal data in real time is being stolen.
Yeah. Yes. And it's a criminal offence. And nobody's being investigated and nobody's being prosecuted. And the party you need to put we all need to put our finger on is the Information Commissioner, John Edwards.
And so who has been publishing your articles on this over the last few years?
Nobody.
Really? I thought it was Computer Weekly, weren't they?
Oh, yes. Now, that's completely wrong. Computer Weekly ran the early versions of the story, but Computer Weekly, unfortunately, is now an American magazine.
Right. Oh, no. Was that before or after the post office scandal?
It was one of these takeovers. I don't think there was any connection. But my own feeling is I don't think the magazine is... It did an amazing job on the post office. It made me so proud to have being an editor on with the paper, but I think they would be wiped out if they tried anything to report anything.
Okay, well, we like to think of Private Eye as the scandal sheet of Britain. What was your verdict on it?
For myself and other people, I buy 3 copies a fortnight. It worried me over recent years that it seemed unable to get to the heart. You know, you're reporting all these frauds and thefts and all this sort of stuff. The Private Eye seemed unable to get together and say, is there institutional fraud here? Is our system internally corrupt? And here's the proof. And they won't print it, of course.
Well, I had a similar experience in 2006, sending them very damning information about the 7/7 London bombings.
About
the bombings in London,
yeah,
in 2005. They were not interested in printing any of it.
Nope.
So Private Eye, to me, it's a sort of, well, you could, somewhere between a controlled opposition and limited hangout. Is there anywhere, do you think, in Britain that is worth, you know, if you've got a story and the mainstream press won't touch it, which is the norm in many cases nowadays, is there anywhere to go?
At the moment, no. I mean, think of what happened to Tony Stansfeld. He was the most honourable person you ever met. Senior army officer, long-term conservative. Tony was beaten off. He said the board of Lloyds Bank is corrupt, and his reward for that was to be kicked out. He wasn't even offered an MBE, and the chief executive of Lloyds Bank was given a knighthood. That's how it works. The crooks get the honours.
Okay, Kevin Carhill, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks very much, Tony. It was a good session.